Welcome to Answering the Call with host Elizabeth Ficicello. In this program, Elizabeth gives us a glimpse into the spiritual journeys of priests, deacons, and religious sisters and brothers from the Columbus Diocese who have heard and answered God's call. And here's your host, Elizabeth Ficicello.
Hi there, and welcome to Answering the Call here on St. Gabriel Catholic Radio AM 820 and streaming live on stgabrielradio.com. I'm your host, Elizabeth Ficicelli, and in this next half hour, we have a chance to meet some of the people who serve our diocese in special ways. Today, I'm going to be speaking with a religious sister. Her name is Sister Eileen Fitzsimmons, and she is from the Order of Carmelites. She currently serves at the Villas at St. Therese, an assisted living center here in Columbus. And she's going to be sharing her spiritual journey with us today on the program. So welcome to St. Gabriel Catholic Radio AM 820, Sister Eileen.
Thank you very much.
We're delighted to have you with us. And I'd kind of like to start at the beginning, Sister. You told me you were born in Manhattan and then grew up in the Bronx, New York, in a practicing Catholic family. So how would you describe your family growing up in terms of how you celebrated the faith?
Well, when my brother and I went to Catholic school, I had the Dominican Sisters of Sparkill in grammar school and in high school. My brother had them in grammar school, and then he went on to the Christian Brothers in high school. For church, we attended Sunday Mass with the school, but during the summer, we would go as a family to our church. So we always made Sunday Mass no matter what happened.
So Catholic life was very important to you, very
yes.
much a part of your family
yes.
Upbringing. And as you said, you and your brother attended parochial school, and that's where it sounds like you got your first exposure to religious sisters. As you say, they were Dominican.
Right.
Were there any in particular that had a great influence on you?
There was a sister that I had in the fifth grade, and again, I had her in high school, Sister Teresa Miriam. She was just one of the ones who seemed to like everyone, had no favorites. And to me, that was very important, especially, you know, when you're in the fifth grade.
Mm-hmm.
And she was very kind and very fair, but very strict. So
would you say that it was Sister Teresa Miriam who inspired you to become a religious?
I think eventually. I think, you know, when you're in the lower grades, you know, half the girls wanted to become sisters and half the boys wanted to become priests, and then you grow out of it. And then in high school, there was an older man living in our neighborhood, and he ended up in a nursing home that was run by the Carmelite Sisters for the aged and infirm. And his granddaughter asked me to go visit him. So I wasn't too happy visiting a nursing home because I thought, that is not the place that I want to see. So in we went to visit him. And I don't think we stayed too long with him because on the way in, all I saw were wheelchairs. I didn't see people. I didn't see anything else but just wheelchairs. And on our way out, we bumped into a Sister Mary Daniel. I'll never forget her. She asked me if I'd come back to volunteer. And being raised Catholic by the sisters, you just didn't say no. So instead of saying no, I said, okay, because I thought that was half yes and half no. So I left, and that was it. And then my mother went to visit the same gentleman, and she came home, and she said, Sister Mary Daniel's looking for you to volunteer. I said, well, I didn't say yes. She said, yes, but you didn't say no. So back I went, and it just happened to be at supper time. And I went in, and the sisters were serving supper to the residents. So they asked if I wanted to help. And when I walked in, I thought to myself, how did I get back here? So I started serving them, and all of a sudden I saw people in front of me, and they were very, very nice. And I thought to myself, this is like my grandmother and grandfather that I never met because they lived in Ireland. And it was just one thing right after the other.
And these sisters were not Dominicans, though.
Oh, no, no, no. I was taught by the Dominican sisters, and those were the ones who taught you not to say no.
Uh-huh. But these sisters were Carmelites.
These were Carmelites, but they were still sisters, so I thought, you don't say no to them. It was just a wonderful experience.
Did you know anything about the Carmelites when you were volunteering at that nursing home? Or
nothing, absolutely nothing. I just thought all sisters wore white habits like the Dominicans did.
Mm-hmm.
And these sisters were dressed in brown habits. And at the time, they were the long habits, the old habits. Mm-hmm. But there was something about them. I wanted to come back again. They were very happy, very joyful. The Dominicans were too, but mm-hmm. I think because they had to be so strict with us.
Mm-hmm. And you weren't really called to teaching, were you?
No, I didn't care for teaching at all.
Which is the Dominican charism. So,
right, yeah. Right. So I volunteered there for a while, and then I was in the Legion of Mary in high school. So the sister that was in charge of that asked if anybody liked to volunteer. So I thought, oh my gosh. So most of the girls wanted to go help in a children's place. So I tried to talk some of them to coming to the nursing home with me, and they had the same idea too. No
a
way.
Resistance, yeah. Uh-huh.
So I went back, and I just loved it and got to love the residents. And when I finished high school, it was Sister Teresa Miriam from my fifth grade that I had talked to about entering, and she was very open to me going to another community. Mm-hmm. Some of the Dominicans, of course, thought all the girls should enter Spark Hill.
Which is Dominican, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And so I said, no, I thought I'd be, you know, like to be a Carmelite. And she said, I always knew you were very quiet but very stubborn because I was left-handed. And she tried to change me to right-handed when I was in the fifth grade mm-hmm. and just couldn't do it.
Yeah. What'd your family think of this discernment?
Well, it's funny. My mother was okay with it. I said, well, you said, Ma, you can't say no to the nuns. So that ended that. My father, you know, was looking forward to me getting married, having a big wedding church wedding in our parish in St. Brendan's in the Bronx. He was okay with it. And the night before I entered, it happened to have Miss America on the TV. So I was going to bed that night, and he was almost in tears and said, you'll always be my Miss America.
Aw, that's sweet.
But he had a very hard time with me entering, and he said, you'll be home in 2 weeks because you can't get up anyway.
But you would. After high school, you would enter right away. What was your first step then? Where'd you go first?
We went to Mary Manning Walsh Home, which was a nursing home in Manhattan. It was an older home, which they've built another one up on 72nd Street, but at that time it was on 59th Street. And we were there for 6 months with another sister, another Carmelite, you know, just getting us into the prayer life and community life and working with the elderly. And the 6 months just flew by. It was wonderful. And then we received the Carmelite habit up at the Mother House in Germantown, New York.
Okay. So after your first 6 months of formation, you decided to continue with this vocation process. That's when you entered the Mother House in Germantown. What did you do for the next 2 years while you were there?
Well, the first year was dedicated just to, I might say, you know, intense prayer life. We learned all about the Carmelites, you know, contemplation.
Well, it might be a good time to talk a little bit about Carmelite spirituality, because we've had Dominican sisters on the show before. We've had a good shepherd sister, but you are our first Carmelite guest. So what can you tell us about Carmelite spirituality in general?
Well, Carmelite spirituality is more, it's combining our active life with our spiritual life. And, you know, our contemplation is nourished by our life of prayer and community and our service to the elderly, because we meet in the novitiate, we met three times a day for prayers. We have prayers in the morning and prayers in the evening. And because we weren't in the missions or the nursing homes, we were able to have a rosary in the afternoon. We spent time at adoration, and it was more intense, but it was mostly trying to combine, tell us how we could combine our contemplation, our prayer life, with integrated into our community and our service with the elderly. And then the second year, we learned, you know, about the nursing homes and how they run and still continue with the prayer life.
So is, in your case, working with the aged and infirmed, is that a specific charism then to the Carmelites, like teaching is, for instance, to the Dominicans?
Yes. In fact,
so if someone were to think, okay, I'm feeling called to the Carmelite order, they would expect to be working in either hospitals, nursing homes, you know, to be working with the elderly and the sick. Is that correct?
Well, if they were working in the Carmelite Sisters of the Aged and Infirm, charism is a grace that God gifts to each individual group to perform a specific mission in the church, and ours is prayer and caring for the elderly. So as a Carmelite Sister for the Aged and Infirm, that is our only mission.
Okay. We're talking today with Sister Eileen Fitzsimmons. She's a Carmelite sister who serves the elderly at the Villas at St. Therese, an assisted living center here in Columbus. And this is Answering the Call on St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820. And I'm your host, Elizabeth Ficicelli. So, Sister, you spent 7 years in formation to become a Carmelite. You gave us a little bit of an idea what your day was like and the prayer and the contemplation. So let's pick up your story again. You were fully professed as a Carmelite sister in 1966. And this was an eventful year for the church because Vatican II had just ended. There were a lot of changes to come. How would you say that affected your Carmelite order and you personally?
Well, at the time, there was quite a few changes. That's the year that we made our perpetual vows. And we saw other communities changing drastically. And I was a little bit impatient because our foundress was still alive and she was still in charge of the community. And I thought to myself, we have to move a little bit. And I became sort of a quiet rebel. I just wanted something to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? In years later, I could see her wisdom of why she held us back. Because with some of the drastic changes, they lost many religious. Some of our sisters left because we didn't move quickly enough.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think we lost as many as other communities where they just... I shouldn't say all the communities, but many of them just almost ran rampant. Mother Angeline was ahead of her time. The other communities were never allowed to go home. When they entered, my friend entered another community the day after I did. And within the first week, they asked her which funeral she wanted to go to, which parent she wanted to go to, the mother or the father.
Mm.
And those were some of the things that needed to be changed.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with Mother Angeline Teresa, you know, she thought our families were wonderful. If they were sick, she allowed us to go home, even as new sisters, postulants, and novices. Within about 5 years, we were allowed to go home and stay overnight. And she was criticized for a lot of the things that she was ahead of her time.
Mm-hmm. Let's speak about her just a little bit because there's some exciting news with her.
Yes.
But her name, as you said, was Mother Angeline Teresa McCrory.
Right.
Carmelite. She was born in Ireland.
Right.
She became at first a little sister of the poor.
That's right.
Came to the Bronx, New York, and founded a new congregation, the Carmelite Sisters for the Aged and Infirmed, and that was 1929.
Right.
And that today there's 17 homes for the aged in the U.S. and one still in Ireland.
Yes.
But tell us the exciting news that's going on with Mother.
Well, June 28th, we got word that Mother Angeline was made venerable.
Mm.
So I don't think we needed telephones to tell each other. You could almost hear everybody, you know, screaming. Everybody was so excited. And everybody remembers exactly where they were.
Okay. And we have a lot of listeners who are not Catholic. So explain what that means to be venerable.
Okay. To become a saint, there's four steps. The first one is a servant of God, which Mother was made. She only died in 1984. So she was made a servant of God in a very short time, which was very unusual.
Mm-hmm.
The second step is venerable, and that's when they read her life story and decide she has heroic virtues. She was very human, made many mistakes, but was very heroic in what she did.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next step is if there's a miracle, which we think we have right now.
Exciting.
Which is wonderful. And the fourth step is becoming a saint, and that's when they go to Rome and they're canonized. But we think we have several miracles.
It must be very exciting to know a venerable.
Yes.
In person. That's very exciting.
I just came back from the Mother House on Sunday. We had a special mass up there. One sister from every one of the missions was there. And it was just a wonderful feeling to be there. And most of us knew her, which made it even better.
Mm-hmm. So. And Sister, when you're talking about missions, these are the different nursing home facilities all over the place that you're stationed at.
That's
so
right.
Let's look at some of the ones that you have been through in your years. After your final profession of vows, where did you serve next?
Okay. First, I went to South Boston, mm-hmm. which is, again, it was an older home, and they've rebuilt it, but it was a nursing home at the time. I think there were about 150 residents there. And then for a few, about a year, I worked what they call the infirmary, mm-hmm. which is now called skilled care. And then for another year, I worked on one of what they call the well floors. And then we met with the superior of the house to make sure that we were still on the right path with prayer and with ministry.
Okay.
And then after that, I worked in the infirmary with one of the sisters who was a nurse, and then they asked me to go into nursing school.
Well, I was going to ask that because, you know, with your focus of caring for the sick, it's such an important
yes.
ministry to your community. Is that a normal course of events that a sister would go for her nursing degree?
Not all the sisters. Some have gone. I went to nursing St. Clair's in New York. We have sisters going for physical therapy, occupational therapy, mm-hmm. administrators. We have some in counting. We have a few that are computer wizards. It's a healthcare field, but not everybody is in the healthcare.
Okay. But you did go ahead and pursue your registered nursing degree.
Yes.
And a master's too, is that correct?
Yes, I have my postmaster's in nursing.
Okay.
But as a young sister, we used to move about every 2 years just so that we could get to accustomed to a larger home or a smaller home, so that we were sort of integrated by the time we came back to make our perpetual vows.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I went to Ireland for 6 years.
Now that is exciting.
It was absolutely wonderful.
What was Ireland like?
Even though they spoke English, it was a different culture altogether.
Mm-hmm.
They used to tell me to slow down. They'd say, here comes the Yank, and tell her to stop running.
Well, not only a Yank, a New Yorker.
Yes. But I just loved it. And by the time I came back after 6 years, I was wondering why everybody in New York was rushing so much.
Really? So it did, kind of infiltrate you. So you slowed down a little bit.
But you know what? You slow down and you realize, life is to be appreciated even more when mm-hmm. you slow down, because now I'm back to rushing again, unfortunately.
You have to get back to Ireland for a little
yes.
while, right? Now, after Ireland, you went to Albany, New York,
yes.
and would work in another nursing home facility.
Right, and I worked, first we had a dementia program, and then we were able to build a dementia unit, which I was thrilled that I had the opportunity to have some input into. And then we had 50 residents with dementia in the unit, and it was marvelous. I just loved it. I always say they gave me more than I could give them.
Mm.
And they always knew the mood you were in, never mind themselves. And they would come over, have a headache or something, they come up and give me a hug and say, what's wrong today? And they just blow me away with some of the things they would say to me. They were very, very perceptive.
That's beautiful.
But it was a wonderful feeling working with the residents with the dementia.
Then you took a break for a little bit working with the elderly, because then you went back to the mother house
yes.
and started working in formation with the novices. And tell us about that experience.
Okay. I worked with the women who entered right away. They were called postulants. And by this time, the postulancy was 8 months instead of the 6 months that we had. And we stayed at the mother house for a month just to get them into the idea of prayer and work, and to give them an idea of the home that we were going to, the mission that we were going to. And then out on the mission, they would each go to a different floor once a month, or a different department, regardless of their training. Because at this point, we had somebody who was in activities and one who was a nurse practitioner, the first group I had. And they went through social service for a month, physical therapy, nursing. For the 6 months, they had six different areas to pursue. And then they came back to the mother house to prepare themselves during a retreat to receive the habit. And then they went on to the novitiate. Then I met the next group. So
then, now, having worked with these novices, what do you think draws women today to the Carmelite order?
Well, I think anytime we've gone to vocation rallies, they always seem to come up to us And more now I see that the what draws them first is probably the habit. And then with our community, they're drawn that the work with the elderly is our only ministry that we use. And then they hear about our prayer life and a community life because we meet twice a day for prayer.
Mm-hmm.
We meet at 6:30 in the morning and then 5:30 at night for prayer. And our community life, you know, we have meals together and all. So I think that's what's drawing them right now.
Okay. And 3 years ago, you came to Columbus to work at the villas at St. Therese.
No, right.
That it's an assisted living center compared to a nursing home.
That's right.
How is that different for you?
I find it quite, it's not the hectic pace of a nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
This, I can go in if not somebody's not feeling good. You know, if they want a cup of tea, I can bring in a cup of tea. I mean, I have staff working with me, but I always like the hands-on. So I bring them in a cup of tea. If somebody's, you know, some of the residents have lived so long, they're losing children now.
Mm.
And we had one lady come in and, you know, she lost her daughter. So I'd go in every afternoon with a cup of tea, just for about a minute or two. And it's the cup of tea that I always felt, you know, was part of our hospitality. And Mother Angeline always would say, would you like a cup of tea?
Aww.
So I always, you know, put tea with hospitality and caring and loving.
Just bring a little bit of Ireland to them, a little slower paced, a little hospitality. And I would imagine that Carmelite sisters like yourself would also be a great support to the families of these residents.
Yes. Some people, it's not so, it is in the, I guess, in the assisted living too. If the resident has not made the choice and needs to come into the assisted living, it's very difficult for them to adjust. And also sometimes they lay guilt on the families, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And we try to be supportive to the families as well as to the residents and also to the staff. So.
Right. And so you help them with that decision to put someone in a nursing home.
Right.
They know they're being loved and cared for.
Yes.
And I bet just wearing the habit, you know, because not everyone who are in these facilities may be Catholic or even spiritual. So
no,
I would imagine you're bringing God to them.
Right.
You know, just by wearing your habit.
Yeah, we don't have, they don't have to be Catholic to come to us. In fact, in Albany, where I was, we had many Jewish people and the rabbi would come in once a month for a service. So it doesn't necessarily have to mean that they're Catholic to come to us. But they know we're Catholic, they know we have Mass, and they're welcome to bring their minister in or their rabbi, whatever. You know, but we do have Mass every day.
Right. I remember my own father's experience, who passed away this year, that it was at that time of his life in a nursing facility that he began to talk about God after about 50 years of not talking about God. So it's sort of like a time of people's lives where they think they are ready to talk about God sometimes for the first time. And
I think so. Just recently, we had a man that came who had fallen away from the church because his son died when he was very young, and he was still very angry with God. And his daughter told me about it, so I didn't want to push it. So he was there about 4 months when I said, would you ever think of coming to Mass? He said, who wants to know? I said, well, besides me, I think God does. And he laughed. He never came to Mass, but then he moved back to Tennessee because he was dying and the daughter couldn't make it up to Columbus all the time. And he sent a message up to me, just tell that one. He used to call me Lefty. He said, tell Lefty I went to church. And tell him not to drop, because I did. So I sent a message back. I said, I knew, because I've been praying for you.
Oh,
you know,
sweet.
So I've kept in touch with the daughter. He's dying very slowly, unfortunately, but I'm so happy. And so is she. So.
Aw. You know, the elderly have so much life experience. What life lessons have you learned personally from working with the elderly?
Oh, gosh. There's so many, but I guess the main one is they've been through so much. They've been through the depression. They've just, you know, they've seen their children die, their husbands die, or their wives die. And I see them clinging to their religion because their faith, you know, whether they're Catholic or non-Catholic, they cling to their faith because they say in the end, that's all that matters. And I think it strengthened my faith even more, just listening to them, you know.
I can imagine.
Yes.
What do you like best and what's most challenging about your vocation?
Okay, well, the the best I love is working with the elderly, which I missed very, very much when I was at the Mother House. The hardest could also be the easiest. The hardest is sometimes is community life, but just like a family. You know, you have wonderful days and you have not so wonderful days. So I find community life rewarding, but it has challenges like family life.
Yeah. You know? We never can get away from that, I don't think. That's part of our life experience, no matter what path we're walking.
Yeah.
Well, Sister Eileen, what advice might you have for some women out there who are listening to this and maybe thinking about this kind of a vocation for themselves?
I would just say, you know, if you're thinking about it, the Lord's calling you. You're not going to get an angel to tap you on the shoulder. You know, to talk to somebody, you know, be it a young man, go to talk to a priest. If it's a woman, go talk to a sister. We're having a vocation weekend at St. Therese Retreat House on Broad Street in October.
Mm.
So if anybody would be interested in our community or any community, you know, they'd be more than welcome. But I would say if you have any inkling or you're thinking about this or the fact that you're listening to this says, you know, the Lord might be tapping you on the shoulder and you're trying to avoid it.
Ah, beautiful.
But I'm very, very happy all these years, you know, but I wouldn't give it up for the world.
Oh, well, that's wonderful. You're such a blessing to us today at the radio station and to the patients you serve. Thank you again, Sister Eileen Fitzsimmons, for the for being a guest on the show. And can you leave us with a prayer, please?
Dear Lord, we thank you for all the graces and blessings you've given us through the years. And I ask the blessings on all of those who are listening today, and especially from Venerable Mary Angeline Teresa McCrory. Amen.
Amen. I'm Elizabeth Ficicelli, host for Answering the Call. I hope you'll join us next week for another edition, Saturdays at 10:30 and Sundays at 4. Have a great week. God bless.
If you know a priest, deacon, or religious sister or brother that might be interested in telling St. Gabriel listeners how God inspired him or her to answer the call, please contact us at info@stgabrielradio.com.